All right, so in the interest of brevity on the long weekend, Lee, we are going to do a brief Bible study. This time I'm going to remember where it is, in Psalm 29. So this is what's called an enthronement psalm. And so when I eventually talk about psalms of neuroorientation in a few weeks' time, I'll talk a little bit more about this. But an enthronement psalm has a particular place in like the liturgical practice of the Israelite people and church in Jerusalem. And so it's a little bit weird. So what I'm going to be talking about today, just off the top of my head, is based on what Walter Brueggemann had to share in a series of lectures he did on this particular topic. And it's interesting because he talks about a guy named Sigmund Mowinckel, who is a Norwegian scholar from the early 19th century is when he started writing stuff. Late 19th, early 20th century. And so he wrote a series of pamphlets that were kind of controversial. They were controversial because they, especially in regards to this particular psalm, they talk about how once a year there would be a ceremony that they would hold in Jerusalem. And in that ceremony, it's like a dramatic performance. So this is a dramatic liturgy. It's a performance where they would enthrone Yahweh again. But the reason that Mowinckel's kind of hypothesis is controversial, and a lot of theologians, according to Brueggemann, basically all the theologians who know what they're doing operate with Mowinckel's theology in the background, but they're all a little bit too embarrassed or a little bit too shy, or no one wants to fully go all in and say we agree with him. So it's kind of his hypothesis is controversial, but not so controversial that they don't all operate with it. And his hypothesis is this: all the gods would get together every year and have like a contest, and the god that would win that contest would be announced the god, the greatest of the gods for the next 12 months. And this particular psalm is a reenactment of that scene. So it's controversial because it talks about Judaism being polytheistic, which is controversial. And that is because this psalm is almost certainly a Canaanite psalm that was taken and readopted for Judaism. And then the reason why I've looked up not just Psalm 29, but also Psalm, 96? Yeah. Is that in Psalm 96 is a newer version of the same type of thing. So it's like they stole a Canaanite psalm and then it got updated again. And this could be literally like hundreds, it could be like a long time later. So the psalm then we have recorded in Psalm 96 is a newer version of the same kind of thing. And they are what we call enthronement psalms. So I'll go more into this. So it starts out in Psalm 29 and I'm going to read... I'll start with the New International, but we'll see what some of these, this thrilling four comparative study Bible, parallel Bible, four different versions. We'll have a look what they say as well. So it says, "Ascribe to the Lord, O mighty ones, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness." So that very first bit where it says, "Ascribe to the Lord, O mighty ones." If I look across... all of these say the same thing. Well, that's less exciting. The King James says, "O ye mighty." So it's a little bit more exciting. But some of these will say, some different translations have like sons of God there, or they might have divine beings or things to that effect. Does anyone have a different version there that says a different? Heavenly beings. So this sons of God, which is another translation there, these heavenly beings, these divine beings, these mighty ones, the sons of might. In the Canaanite version of this, that would have literally been talking about the different gods that were gathered. And spoiler, they were going to announce that Baal was the god of gods. But you know, we are not, you know, that's right, boo, yeah. But in this version of it, and one of the ways that people in the more modern tradition, who if they're uncomfortable with the idea that the Jews were polytheistic, I'm not sure how you can be fully uncomfortable with that, because Even Moses came down from the hill and they're like, let's worship Baal. Let's make a golden calf. They were clearly worshiping other gods all the time. So the idea that they believed in a pantheon of gods and were polytheistic shouldn't be controversial, but it does violate our sensibilities because, especially in the Jewish tradition and then the Christian version of the Jewish tradition, we talk about it being monotheistic and we have this triune God, and it's like, and it is kind of the special source of Judaism later on, is that they believed in one God. But earlier on, they kind of believed in a whole bunch of gods. And even earlier on again, there's some confusion as to whether or not El and Yahweh were two different gods. So when it talks about El being the God, like, it's all very confusing. And I think that it's worth us just being honest about that and saying, it's bloody confusing. We're not entirely sure what these Jews 7,000 years ago really thought. It doesn't actually influence or change my worship of Jesus and my belief and faith in his death and resurrection and his salvation of the world. Totally unrelated. But for some people, they get caught up in the detail and everything becomes related. So if you have, if you don't believe in young earth creationism and there isn't a literal 7 days, then all of a sudden, all of the claims about Jesus fall down. And that's just not how my faith works anymore. Once upon a time, I had a faith that was built like that. Thank goodness I don't anymore. Because the more I study the Bible, the more I realize that makes no sense. So, ascribe to the Lord, O sons of the mighty, O mighty ones, O divine beings. The way that if you wanted to justify that, you would say this is a gathering of angels. It's the angelic beings have all gathered, but I think it's probably more likely, at least in its original version, this was speaking of the gods that had gathered. So it says, ascribe to the Lord. This is like a political rally. They're saying, vote Yahweh, vote one for Yahweh. And then so later on, when we get into, was it 69? That was the other one. 96, I keep getting it wrong. In 96, it says in verse 7, ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. So you'll see here in the early version, it says, ascribe to the Lord, you the sons of the mighty, or the ascendant ones, or the divine beings. But then later on, it's saying, no, the families of all the people, the families of the nations, all of you who are gathered before the throne, ascribe to the Lord. This is a political statement. Vote one for Yahweh, not for Baal, not for any of the other gods, but for Yahweh. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. The voice, and now, so they've all gathered and they've said, hush, 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 hush. Everyone, we are here for the grand performance. So they are all gathered. And now Yahweh is going to do his big performance to prove to them that he's the best God. So I like the way that Brueggemann talks about this. He says it's like the Miss America pageant. And they've all, you know, now they get to do their special skill. And Yahweh steps up to the plate. The voice of the Lord is over the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord thunders over the mighty waters. The mighty waters, it's talking about the waters, the deep, the true deep waters. It's saying that the Lord thunders over death. He thunders over the chaos of creation. He is Yahweh. Ascribe to the Lord, O mighty ones. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. All right, let's keep going. The voice of the Lord is powerful. It's so now it's like it's thunder from the heavens. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is majestic. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The Lord breaks in pieces the cedars of Lebanon. He makes Lebanon skip like a calf. The winds howl so strong that these cedars are flapping in the wind. It's like the legs of a calf when it's trying to walk for the first time. They're all wobbling all over the place. This is what Yahweh does. Sirion, like a young wild ox, the voice of the Lord strikes with flashes of lightning. The voice of the Lord shakes the desert. The Lord shakes the desert of Kadesh. The voice of the Lord twists the oaks and strips the forest bare. And then we have this. Then we have the uh, the resounding cry, all of the people. So they've gathered in the temple. All the gods have turned up to see Yahweh's performance, and Yahweh has made it thunder, and Yahweh has stood over all of the deserts and all of the waters, and he's done all these incredible things, and there's lightning, and it is a powerful display of his glory and his might. And then it says at the end of verse 9, all in his temple, all cry, glory. Glory! And the Lord sits enthroned over the flood. And now normally you would think this is a terrible place to sit, to put your throne in the midst of the water and the floods, but not Yahweh. Yahweh, and we later see with Jesus, he commands the storm and he says, be still. So Yahweh says to the flood, and he says to the waves, and he says to everything in creation, he says, be still. The Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord is enthroned as king forever. The Lord gives strength to his people. The Lord blesses his people with peace. This is what Yahweh does. Yahweh brings peace and blessing to all his people. So this is reflected in the psalm that in Psalm 96 as well. Ascribe to the Lord, O families of the peoples. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory of his name. I love this later in Psalm 96. From verse 11, it says, let the heavens be glad and let the earth rejoice. Let the sea roar and all it contains. This is what Yahweh's like. The sea itself has to cry out to him. Let the field exult and all that is in it. Then all the trees of the forest will sing for joy before the Lord, for he is coming. For he is coming to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples in his faithfulness. The Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord is enthroned as king forever. So in the enthronement ceremony in Jerusalem, this would be a liturgical thing. So every year they would gather and they would read a psalm like this. And there would be a performance of sorts that enthroned the Lord forever. And so it was like this constant reminder. And we, in Christendom, we have these same liturgical things that we do. So when we celebrate at the birth of Christ, at Christmas, it's an enthronement ceremony. Think about the kind of call and response stuff from the Christmas services or the Easter services. It's about him coming as Lord to bring peace, and he is enthroned. So there is something, and this is why we'll talk about these psalms in the context of new orientation. There is something of saying there is something new happening. Now, it might be happening every year, but it's new and fresh. God is reestablished in his throne. He is king forever. Glory be to God. Praise be to God. Prince of peace, Lord of lords, King of kings. And so you can see in this how the Jewish people, in these psalms, it was the ceremony. In the same way that we have invented liturgy and ceremony, this was their ceremony, and they would have known these words and they would have reenacted these things together. And in the reenactment of these things, it gives life to something. I can see them doing this, and every year, like we have our Christmas thing and we all get up and we have our silly little script and we reenact it. It's like that. They would get together, and I suspect it was more solemn than our Christmas gathering, but there was something of saying, yes, we recognize this. We enthrone the Lord Almighty forever. We have a new orientation now. We refocus at this time. And so we'll look at that more, but we'll do that in a few weeks' time. Now I think it's time for coffee.
I was just saying, it's like So the creation account, a lot of people do say that the creation account is actually like taking a creation story that's in Babylon, repurposing it, and then showing the might of God, right? So, and the whole point is that their story is about like warring gods, and then the Jews' account is like, our God is so powerful, he doesn't need war. He just uses his voice. And everything's just like, boom, 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 happens. And I think it's quite similar to this, where it's just God's voice is enough. Like one, you know, just does it, and then stuff is happening, thunder, lightning, the trees are shaking. Like, just that. Like, that's how powerful SmackDown. We were joking about GOAT as like God of all time, but yeah.
Yeah, there is like lots of the Jewish stuff came out of the cultural context of the ancient Near East. So it shouldn't be a surprise that the flood stories in the Bible do have some elements that reflect like the Enuma Elish or the Babylonian Gilgamesh, or the, like, there are elements that cross over, even in like the Ten Commandments. Yeah, and it's a subversion then. So it's the same way that we would take a pub song and turn it into a hymn. It's, who cares where that came from? And like, so it's easy for people to get upset. Well, why are we doing a Christmas service? It's some, you know, pagan solstice thing. Well, no, it's not. Because we are enthroning Jesus as King, as Prince of Peace, and beginning a new season that reflects the glory of Christ. And that origin is actually of no consequence, because it is a subversion of that cultural story that exists. And so even in the Ten Commandments, we see that. So there was the Ten Commandments. If you look at other ancient literature of the era of the ancient Near East, you find that the law of Hammurabi is very similar to the Ten Commandments in some ways, because like it's their version of case law. So it's like saying we're going to start a new nation, and we're going to take the constitution of this other nation, and we're going to adapt it to be ours. So we took the law of Hammurabi and we adapted it into the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, and said this is going to be our case law. And so that when we then have courts and gatherings and whatever, we know how we should live as our own people. And so the Psalms are the same. A lot of them have origins, and a lot of the worldview and ideas of the Jewish people have origins in those other pagan things. Yeah, Chevelle's just saying for those who are playing at home that there are some people within modern Christendom who are very uncomfortable with the idea that the Jewish people or even the Christians have borrowed from other secular society or pagan culture in some ways, because it would undermine the authority of Yahweh if there was something pre-Yahweh. But I think God created the heavens and the earth. But I do think that there was all this other stuff going on the earth that then the Jewish nation got made, you know, but that's like Moses. There's a lot of time before that. Abraham was a pagan. Like when God called him out of where he was, he was a pagan, and his father was Terah, was a pagan, which is why he was like, kill my kid, sure. All the bad gods want us to kill our kids. And so he wasn't upset about it. So the idea that we need to have Christendom or Judaism be the only thing or the first of that thing or somehow unique instead of being a product of the ancient Near East just is silly.
It took me 40 years to get there.
Yeah, you and me both, right? So
just reading Psalm 96, I like the way it plays with Psalm 29, like the idea of Psalm 96 being a rewrite. There's like, so Psalm 29 is like, he breaks the cedars, he ruins the forests basically. And then Psalm 96 goes through all this stuff and it's like, let the sea roar, let the fields exult. Like then shall all the trees of the forest sing for joy before the Lord because he's coming. Like that's how it finishes it up. So it's like playing with these ideas about how God works in the world and saying, you know, maybe God can destroy the forest if he want to, but actually he can make them sing for joy. Like that's really interesting how you get that play even within the same songbook about that kind of stuff.
But also it's a great justification for tweaking old hymns that talk about you know, the wrath of God, because we can be more theologically developed than our forebears 500 years ago or whatever it is. And we can say, no, it's the majesty of God, the glory of God, the kindness of God, the mercy of God, not the wrath of God. And we can take that old hymn and we can change it, because there is something majestic about those, the music and the song, but we also are able to grow and develop theologically, just as you can see in the Psalms. There is a shift there as well. And so that's a great reflection, Siege. One which I will steal when I talk through the Psalms of New Orientation later. All right, are we for real this time? We're done?